Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. As I sit at my desk to prepare this radio transcript, January the 23rd, 1993, I think of all the festivities which have taken place in Washington surrounding the inauguration of William Jefferson Clinton, the 42nd President of the United States. In the first place, I am shocked at the millions and millions of dollars spent on the event when there are countless other projects which needed the money. How can our governmental leaders pretend concern for the poor and the unfortunate when they spend so lavishly on the inauguration? But this obscene spending extravaganza pales into insignificance when we realize that one day after his becoming president, Bill Clinton authorized the killing of thousands and thousands of additional babies. Do you wonder how Bill Clinton and Al Gore can claim to be followers of Jesus Christ and authorize the killing of innocent babies? Will they not have, both in time and in eternity, the blood of countless millions of babies on their hands? During the time Bill Clinton was running for the presidency, he made outlandish and impossible promises to the American people. He vowed to reduce the increase in the national deficit to one-half its current rate. He also promised to cut the tax burden on middle-class Americans. He knew, and we knew, he could not and would not try to do either. His excuse for not cutting our budget deficit was that it was larger than he had thought. All right, let us forget about cutting the deficit in half. Will he cut in half the amount that he thought it would be? We have no right to expect more. Like many other politicians, Bill Clinton made promises he could not and did not expect to honor. Unfortunately, the promises he should not have kept, he has kept and will keep. I speak especially of his decision regarding abortion. The commercial appeal on Saturday, January the 23rd, 1993, published the following headlines. Clinton lifts abortion limits as 75,000 opponents march. The article reads in part as follows. 20 years after the Supreme Court legalized abortion, President Clinton Friday lifted restrictions imposed by his Republican predecessors, while about 75,000 abortion opponents marched through the Capitol. Our vision should be of an America where abortion is safe and legal, but rare, Clinton said, as he fulfilled a campaign promise to abortion rights supporters and medical research organizations. The Democratic president scuttled regulations which had been imposed by Presidents Reagan and Bush by signing executive orders to read, number one, end a 5-year ban on fetal tissue research, which scientists believe holds the possibility of benefiting patients with Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, Huntington's disease, spinal cord injuries, and other conditions. Second, overturn the so-called gag rule that restricted abortion counseling at 4,000 federally funded family planning clinics nationwide. Third, revoke prohibitions on importation of RU486, known as the French abortion pill, for personal use, if the Food and Drug Administration determines that there is no justification for the prohibitions. Fourth, allow abortions at U.S. military hospitals overseas, if they are paid for privately. Fifth, reverse a 1984 order, known as the Mexico City policy, which prevented the United States from providing foreign aid to foreign population control organizations that perform or promote abortions. Page A1. It does not take a genius to anticipate the reactions of abortion supporters as well as of abortion opponents. The Commercial Appeal reports that Pamela Meralda, president of Planned Parenthood, America's largest and most vicious baby killer as saying, I feel like I have just had the shackles taken off me. I feel like the President took the White House out of the dinosaur age of this issue. The President explained his reasons for removing the restrictions on abortion. We must free science and medicine from the grasp of politics. The American people deserve the best medical treatment in the world. We are committed to providing them with nothing less. Pages A1 and A12. Before I review what I have read to you from the commercial appeal, let me give you some of the reactions of those who oppose baby killing. Operation Rescue Director Randall Terry said of Clinton, he knows what is right, but he has been surrounded by wicked counselors. Page A12. Brenda Alexander, spokesman for Black Americans for Life, said, our heads are bloody, but we will not bow. My friends, I am not only in a state of shock, but of grief as well. I am not just grieving for the millions of babies which have been brutalized in every conceivable way, cut into a million pieces, poisoned with salt and prostaglandin, smothered or choked if they are unlucky enough to be born alive. But I grieve for our nation and for our world. Can you explain the insensitivity and hardness of heart of an American president who endorses and encourages the killing of millions and millions of creatures who are made in the image of God? President Clinton makes the ancient king of Egypt and King Herod look like Sunday school teachers. Randall Terry accused President Clinton of listening to wicked counselors. I have no doubt Randall Terry is right on target. But if a president listens to wicked counselors, what does that make the president? An innocent pawn in the hands of his advisors? And who are these counselors to whom the new president has listened? Is it possible that they could be, or at least one could be, someone in his own household? Hillary Clinton is a radical feminist and a rabid abortion supporter. Her influence on the president will be powerful and evil because of her commitment to an ungodly agenda. Besides, President Clinton has political obligations to the women's liberation movement, Planned Parenthood, the American Civil Liberties Union, all American homosexual movements, liberal religion, and other destructive elements in our society. One of the least troubling aspects of President Clinton's executive order was his removal of a ban on fetal tissue research. Oh, I'm strongly and uncompromisingly opposed to the use of fetal tissue in research. It is the kind of pragmatism which justifies any act in the name of helping others. I believe in helping others. That is one of the major tenets of the Christian faith. But can you imagine our Lord Jesus Christ killing a child or encouraging the killing of a child to aid its poor or helpless parents? But if an unborn child is nothing more than a parasite, as Joseph Fletcher claims, or a mass of cells, as many feminists and other abortion supporters pretend, why not use those cells to help some person with Alzheimer's disease or diabetes? But there is not a person on earth, regardless of his education or his political philosophy, who does not know that the feminists and other radical organizations are inexcusably wrong about babies in their mothers' bodies. Does President Clinton not know that what is conceived by a human mother and a human father is a human baby? If he and his wicked counselors, as Randall Terry calls them, do not know that a baby is the product of human conception, then they do not deserve to be running our government. There is no possibility that they do not know. So how do you explain the president's decision to kill hundreds of thousands of babies? There is one and only one explanation. Bill Clinton does not believe in the sacredness of all human life. If he did believe in the sanctity of all human life, and authorize the killing of babies anyway, his actions constitute a monstrous evil of tremendous proportions. During the days of Bill Clinton's administration, we are going to hear much talk about human rights in countries like Bosnia-Herzegovina and in Iraq and in many other places. But how can he be concerned about human rights in other nations and not protect the unborn babies in our country? Are the people of Somalia and other troubled countries more important than our unborn babies? What I am saying to you today must not be misunderstood. The Clinton administration is already guilty of moral and spiritual schizophrenia. It claims to be concerned about people in other lands and in our own nation, but proceeds to kill our own babies just because they are going to be handicapped or because their mothers and society do not want them or because it is politically correct to destroy them. Do the wicked counselors in the Clinton administration know that America is an aging nation? That there are hundreds of thousands of our citizens, including your speaker, who are over 65, and that the numbers are increasing by an accelerated rate? Where are we going to get the citizens to replace our aging population and to provide the necessary Social Security taxes to support those of us who are getting older? Financially, it makes no sense to kill our babies and to destroy our Social Security system. But I'm not arguing against abortion strictly on pragmatic grounds. It is wrong because the law of God forbids the killing of innocent human beings. How does God look on America when we are destroying so many of His children? And all babies, born and unborn, are His children. No nation can kill the innocent and hope to escape God's wrath. Bill Clinton envisions an America, he says, where abortion is safe and legal and rare. I shall pass over his observations about abortions being safe and legal. Does he really desire a country where abortion is rare? He may think he does, but in reality he does not. If he did, he would not have removed the restrictions which previous administrations had imposed on American military hospitals overseas. He would not have removed the so-called gag rule, which restricted abortion counseling in 4,000 federally funded family planning clinics. Besides, if he wanted to reduce the number of abortions and made his desires known to those radical groups which supported him, he would lose their support. He could, if he would, make a difference in the number of babies who are being mutilated. But he does not want to, regardless of his pretensions to the contrary. Bill Clinton argues that government must free science and medicine from the grasp of politics. The American people deserve the best medical treatment in the world. We are committed to providing them with nothing less. If what I have just read to you is a sample of Bill Clinton's reasoning power, this country is in deeper trouble than any of us have ever imagined. What does abortion have to do with freeing science and medicine from the grasp of politics? Where did he get the idea that abortion has anything to do in 99% of the cases with science and medicine? Did Bill Clinton not know that abortions, by and large, are performed for reasons which have nothing to do with either science or medicine? Fewer than 1% of all abortions are performed to save the life of the mother. They are performed because women do not want to have babies which they have given consent to be conceived. The women do not have the moral values to keep their children or to give them to others who so desperately want them. Bill Clinton's statements about abortion and its relationship to science and medicine make absolutely no sense, medically, morally, politically, or otherwise. If you care to challenge that statement, you are encouraged to do so. I'm not sure how Bill Clinton arrived at the opinion that Americans deserve the best medical treatment in the world. Does that not sound a little biased to you? What have we done which makes us deserve to have better medical treatment than our Asian neighbors, or Europeans, or Africans? He says his administration is committed to nothing less than the best treatment in the world for American citizens. What does that have to do with abortion? Could we not have the best possible medical treatment for our citizens and not kill our children in the process? For a president of the United States to infer that abortion contributes to our physical welfare is unfounded and dangerous. What if killing our children who are already born would make us a healthier nation? And in some cases, it almost unquestionably would. Would we be justified in killing our newborns or small children and older people? Would killing our babies, infants, and old people free science and medicine from the grasp of politics? What President Clinton has done involves our government in the killing of babies and has placed our nation in the position of many pagan nations, such as ancient Rome and Greece and modern China. Modern China kills millions of babies by abortion and by infanticide. Can the United States be far behind this godless country? And what about Clinton's removing prohibitions on importation of RU486, the French abortion pill? What he has done is to open the way for the grossest kinds of sexual immorality and removal of all responsibility for one's actions. If you are sexually immoral and get pregnant, forget about the child who is conceived. Just take a pill and kill the baby because you do not have the moral courage to pay for your promiscuity. On the day Bill Clinton announced his intention of killing large numbers of unborn babies, 75,000 people marched through the nation's capital to protest the inexplicable evil of an American president. Who are these people who left home and business and traveled at their own expense to make a statement about the sacredness of all human life? Are they kooks and weirdos who are determined to take away the freedom of women to choose what they will do with their bodies? Contrary to the views of our liberal news establishment, the people who marched on Washington are devoted fathers and mothers, devoutly religious people, and some feminists who have been exploited by abortion. They are people who risk money, reputation, and even their lives to save babies. They know they could go to jail for their demonstrations against the killing of babies. They know how cruel the police are in many jurisdictions. And yet they go and demonstrate and boycott and pray. One more question needs to be raised before I begin to wrap up our lesson for today. Since when does the United States have the right to provide foreign aid to foreign population control organizations which perform or promote abortions? The so-called Mexico City policy shows how arrogant many American governmental officials are. They think they are wise enough to tell other countries such as Mexico, India, China, and Pakistan how to run their governments and how many children they ought to have. Our government thinks it knows how many people there ought to be in the world and is determined to promote its irresponsible policies of population control. That not only is an inexcusable kind of arrogance, it is also what sociologists call ethnocentricity. That is, believing our nation and our leaders are the very essence of wisdom. Our leaders sometimes remind me of a statement from the great book of Job. Job's so-called friends had been spouting off when they should have been listening, or at least keeping their mouths shut. And Job answered and said, "No doubt but you are the people, and wisdom will die with you." Job 12, 1 and 2. Our leaders in Washington are not smart enough to tell the rest of the world how it should live. We do not even have our own house in order. Perhaps you have noticed that I am deeply disturbed over Bill Clinton's first executive orders. I'm not angry, but I'm sad beyond expression. if he begins his administration by decision to kill babies? Where will it all end? Although I am not a prophet nor the son of a prophet, as Amos said, I will be amazed if it is not downhill the rest of the way. Could it be that before the Clinton administration comes to an end, poor mothers, especially mothers on welfare, will be required to kill their unborn babies? Will we see a federal requirement that no child who would be born mentally or physically handicapped ever be allowed to see the light of day? Do you say it is impossible? Would you have thought 21 years ago that our government would someday endorse the killing of 1,600,000 babies every year, 4,000 per day? Could you have envisioned a president who would support and promote the killing of babies, both at home and abroad? How do you think George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison would have reacted in their day to such a brutal governmental policy? And yet Bill Clinton and Al Gore belong to a conservative Southern religious body. Incidentally, most of the Baptist people I know are just as strongly pro-life as I am, and just as opposed to the current administration's killing of babies. The Southern Baptist Convention does not endorse abortion on demand, as Bill Clinton and Al Gore do. There are some pro-life people who probably think my discussion today is too emotional, too strident. In fact, I have heard some so-called pro-life people make such statements. But how can I be unemotional when 4,000 babies are being mutilated every day? Every day. My friends, we're not talking about the spotted owl or some other endangered species. We are talking about little human beings, little babies who are all made in the image of our God. How can people get excited about the killing of animals, which is legitimate, and remain detached when we talk about killing babies, which is not legitimate? Do you understand why I have accused our nation of being schizophrenic on many moral and spiritual issues? Anyone who speaks against any kind of evil, beverage alcohol, gambling, adultery, homosexuality, and such like, will be accused of being strident. But such accusations do not bother me. Do you think John the Baptist may have been accused of stridency when he traveled through Judea decrying the evils of his day? How did the people react? Thousands of sinners believed John's preaching and came to know the way of the Lord through this faithful man of God. Others plotted and planned to hush his voice. Herod succeeded by having this great man of God beheaded. The prophet Jonah, under the Lord's direction, went to the city of Nineveh, the capital city of the Assyrian Empire, a wicked city and a wicked empire. Jonah had one message, yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Jonah 3:4. Is there any possibility the Ninevites accused Jonah of stridency, of being loud, boisterous, harsh? If they did, they did not deter Jonah from his preaching. As a result of his uncompromising preaching, the Ninevites repented, and the city continued for many years. My friend, stridency pays off, at least some of the time. There may not be any other course for preachers of the gospel in our generation. I urge my fellow preachers to join in our efforts to make our nation free of baby killing. In fact, for the sake of the children, I am begging you to speak out on this crucial issue. But what about a preacher speaking out on political issues? Am I not violating the principle of the separation of church and state? I am not violating the First Amendment to our American Constitution. But if I were, it would have to be so. I have no intention of being silent in the face of one of the greatest evils known to the human race. How could I be silent and live with myself? But do preachers have the right to become involved in politics? My friends, I am not telling you how to vote on any political candidate. nor do I have any intentions of doing so. Like the prophet Elijah, I have an obligation to speak the truth on moral and spiritual matters. I'm not comparing myself to the great Old Testament prophet Elijah, but I do want to imitate him and John the Baptist and Jesus Christ in opposing all evil, including killing babies. In our next lesson, I plan to examine the preaching of Elijah. I know you remember his courageous opposition to Ahab and Jezebel. Will you please be listening next Lord's Day for an important lesson? Thank you for listening today. May God continue to bless you.